Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and today my guest is Susie Freeman. Susie is a passionate advocate for suicide prevention and mental health awareness. And today we're going to be discussing how she helps people who might be struggling with suicidal thoughts overcome those issues. So welcome to the show, Susie. I'm really glad to have you here.
Hey, thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here. And leading into Suicide Awareness Month, perfect timing.
Yeah. So we have this episode that we're going to be talking about. Obviously, the topic's going to be around the suicide topic. Warning for the listeners out there, that is kind of a topic that we're going to be talking about. If it's something that might be a little bit too heavy for you, you're not really ready for that. We're perfectly okay with you tuning out this episode and moving on to the next one that comes out in a few days. But hopefully you can stick around and listen to this. I think it'll be really beneficial for you. But before we get into all of that, Susie, for the audience who might not be familiar with you and your work, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. So I really started in 2017. Mainly that is when my oldest son went into the military. He left college and went into the Navy. And when I started joining some of those groups, mom groups and stuff, I started seeing how often these kids are attempting, thinking about, talking, dying by suicide just in the military community. And I was like, got to be kidding me. Right. Like I was terrified for that over anything else for my son. And this was 2017. My younger son also had just entered college with the intent of being a police officer, which he is now, has been for over a year. So knowing these about the boys, I was like, oh, mom's got to be ready, right? You know, you try to be as best prepared as you can for parenting. This was not something I'd ever thought about. And so I really did. I just dug deep, got prepared. My initial focus was military police, but working through some of that, I realized a lot of my own struggles with ideation, how that was not normal. It was not a normal way to think. You know, death should not be an option by you in life. And with that, it really just kind of, I don't know if you know, entrepreneurial, you know how it leads you. So it led me to the path of younger, being a teenager, all of those things, having that mindset, having the mentality, modality, resiliency built in will make you able to handle heading into boot camp, heading into the academy, heading into college, whatever you're heading for, it gives you just a better upper hand. So that's where I'm at. I sit in the teen space. I mentor teens. I teach modalities, ways, mental health awareness, emotional awareness, and hoping that they'll never, ever get to a suicidal ideation point. I am also certified in Phoenix, well, across the nation, to train and certify people in QPR. So it's suicide recognition and prevention training. And I do that for teachers and others that are required to be certified. And I just highly encourage it for people who have families in general.
Yeah. And I think the interesting thing that I found with you and your background is, how you first became aware of this by, entering some of these groups with your children, your own adult children who are mm-hmm. in the military, the police force, and how you kind of like took a step back and said, well, maybe if we have some kids who are more resilient, this won't be as big of an issue going forward, right? And so if we can get those kids, while they're still young, their minds are still, being formed and shaped, opinions and thoughts and all this kind of stuff are going on in their young minds, if we can tackle that issue early on and help them become a little bit more resilient, then maybe mm-hmm. we won't have these big numbers of people who are taking their own lives down the road. And I that's why I think this conversation is especially important because, we really do need to address the issue early on and not be, just addressing the symptoms as they pop up. But I want to talk a little bit more about that in just a minute, but we're going to cut to quick commercial break here. So stay tuned. Hurricane season is almost here, and the time to prepare is right now. When Hurricane Ida hit the Gulf Coast, it destroyed countless homes and left many without access to food and clean water. Millions lost power, and some for weeks. The floods that followed the hurricane washed out roads and made it impossible for grocery stores to restock their shelves. Families were left hungry and desperate, waiting for help that was slow to arrive. But what if you didn't have to rely on FEMA to provide for your family during a crisis? The answer is simple. Be prepared with emergency food kits from 4 Patriots. Their long-lasting and delicious food options are specifically designed to provide you and your loved ones with the sustenance you need when you need it most. 4 Patriots survival food kits are hand-packed in the USA. They last up to 25 years. They come packed inside covert storage totes. They include a wide variety of delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, and are backed by thousands of 5-star customer reviews. 4 Patriots survival food is not just for natural disasters, because in today's world of uncertain supply chains and unpredictable emergencies, it's more important than ever to have a backup plan. Whether it's a temporary power outage, a winter blizzard, or rising food costs, you can rest easy knowing that you have a reliable source of food to see you through. And right now, you can go to 4patriots.com and use code DRIVEON to get 10% off your first purchase on anything in the store, including their emergency food supply kits designed to last up to 25 years. Just go to 4patriots.com and use code DRIVEON to get 10% off your purchase of 4 Patriots survival food. That's 4patriots.com. Use code DRIVEON. So, Susie, in the intro, you were talking a little bit about your personal story, your personal connection to, the journey that got you to where you are right now. And, you know, obviously, you know, your children kind of opened up that door by, you know, going into, you know, the military and the police force. But you had your own, issues as well that you discovered kind of as you were going down this path.
Yeah.
Could you share with us a little bit of your experiences that led you to this mission and how your struggles kind of fueled this passion that you have now?
Oh, for sure. So if I really broke it down real quick as to when I realized, I guess first of all, my very first thought was my early 20s. I remember vividly, I was driving somewhere. I just was in a bad abusive relationship. I was pregnant with my first child. She's almost 29 now. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, it would just be so easy to drive off the edge of this road, the cliff. And since you're in Arizona with me, you may be familiar on the way to Flagstaff, Bloody Basin, the road.
Yes.
Yes. I saw it and I was like, wow, how ironic.
Right.
But of course, then all the other things. Oh my God, what if I do? What if I don't die? What if it kills the baby? What if it paralyzes? You know, all the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That started in my 20s, right? Very early 20s. Just going through life, there would be stints where those thoughts would come during hard moments. Then there's nothing. I never through the 45, 46 years, because I'm 49 now. So in 2020 is when I really was like, whoa, this has got to get. Studying through. So I was very good at preparing my estate, having things lined up for the children, having letters written for them in case, you know, I passed or this, get them this gift, give them this letter, you know, advice, whatever. Yeah. I could leave behind. When my daughter was pregnant, it was Mother's Day. Everly was due that July. So July 21, because she just turned 2. That Mother's Day was a little rough. Not everyone around, I don't know, whatever was happening. Not really sure on that. But I realized, when I started thinking, like, I'm going to write a letter to my daughter for her as a mom, right? Mm-hmm. That was so difficult because you can't. I didn't know if she'd have a special needs kid. I didn't know if my daughter would struggle with, postpartum depression, anything. You can't babysit through a letter, right? I can't be there to physically support her, right? So all of that, it's like, there is nothing I could write, nothing for any of my kids at this point. Now it's, I have to physically be present. So literally realizing that, holy crap, this isn't just a thought or a fleeting thing. This is like a full identity that I had owned. I owned this as a full option for my life, and it was a comfort to me. It was like, if stuff gets hard, I don't care. Screw it. I have this as an option. Now, keep in mind, I never had a plan. There's never a certain point I could go and go, oh my God, yep, I had a plan on Tuesday. It was going to be this way, this route. No, it just is one of those things when you're ideating so much, the danger in that is knowing and making a plan and thinking that it's okay to be thinking this way, that it's normal, right? That when something really devastating or hard happens, you can flip like that, like so fast, where instantly, if the means is there, you possibly would take your life. Right. Because statistically, they say it's only 11 minutes. You need 11 minutes. 68% of people that want to attempt suicide will do it within the first 10 minutes. Give 11 minutes, it drops to 2% actually go through with it. That's insane. That's insane. So I can honestly say that has at times saved my life because I did not have a gun in the drawer. I did not have a gun in my closet, right? I wasn't ready. It wasn't like grab it, go. Mm-hmm. So that has saved my life. But knowing that I had to literally strip my that from my identity as a safety net was, it was really hard. It was very hard. Even though I had been doing work and knowing this wasn't a way of thinking, I never got so deep that I thought I needed to almost like remove it as a part of me. So that was huge, very huge.
Yeah. Yeah. And having that, like you said, as part of your identity, as like, oh, well, it's just that easy and I can just do that. Like you said, it's a super dangerous thing to have as part of your identity because the more you think it, the more you start to believe it. And the more you start to believe it, the more easily and more readily available that thought comes, you know, even the minor things that come up, might just be like, oh, well, you know what? I'll just, you know, go that route instead of dealing with whatever this issue is. And that, you know, that's not a way to go either. You said, that shouldn't be the default mode that you're going through. It shouldn't be a mode period, but, you know, especially not the default first thought, you know, now, as you know, a military and a civilian police mom, you have this perspective, I think, on high stress jobs that maybe you know, a little bit different than maybe some other people, because you are now looking at both of your kids. And you know, I know as a parent myself, you know, my kids are still, you know, young in their, you know, teens and preteen years, but you know, you look at them still as if they're, you know, the little babies that they once were almost, right? And so, so looking at them now as, you know, adults, you know, it's almost like watching a baby with, you know, camo, you know, on and all that kind of stuff. It's not, you know, from a parent's perspective, it's just different, right? Yeah. You know, how does your role as a mother in this, you know, kind of influence your commitment to what you're doing now with suicide prevention and mental wellness and all that?
You know, it's like triple fold of importance for me to be ready. And I continue to tell the boys, hey, you know, I know my boys, I have five kids. They're the boys, the two in the middle that are doing these careers. I know that they are careful in what they tell me because I do worry some. A lot. I worry a lot less than I used to. But I have to trust them. Like Kobe had said, my police officer's son, he's like, look, you moms need to understand that, first of all, you raised us, so you know what we're capable of and who we are as humans. Secondly, you have to trust that we took our training seriously and we take our job seriously. And most importantly, we as a human don't want to die. So trust mom that when I'm in the field, I am doing everything I can to not die or get hurt. So he said, you can control that. And you to sit and worry, any mom to sit and worry about what we're doing in the field serves at zero purpose.
Right.
So I was like, holy crap. Thanks for schooling me, child. That literally lowered my anxiety a lot. So all I make sure I do is that I stay informed. I learn new modalities in training because I'm master trained in neurolinguistics. So working in that subconscious, releasing traumatic feelings and things like that, helping them reduce traumatic moments. If you can catch traumatic moments earlier when they happen, they don't sit and build up like a dirt ball cluster or like a dryer vent. I'm sure you're familiar with like kids or even mm-hmm. yourself. Something can happen, and like a big event will happen. There's a reaction, sure, but then a whole bunch of little things keep. And then finally, one something stupid, a stubbing a toe or whatever, and you lose your mind, right? And you're like, yeah. It was not about the toe stub. It was about the buildup.
It's so, the straw that broke the camel's back. Yes, that thing, right? Yeah.
And there are ways you can go in and reduce that and help. I mean, there's lots of things people can do instantly. You know, if something happens in the field, there are things, even that Navy SEALs use them, certain types of breath work, certain types of, you know, tapping and things to help the nervous system calm down. That's what I'm here for. That's what I continue to remind my boys about. I'm like, you don't need to tell me the trauma or the experience or the situation. You can just say, I need help. Mm-hmm. I can help you. And that's what I'm here for. They know it. I continue to remind them of that. And that's the best I can do. The best I can do is just be ready.
And I think the advice that your son gave you too, in saying that, you know, you raised us, you did your best with raising mm-hmm. us, and you got to trust that your best is good enough. And that's going to be what gets us through. And so, and you're right. You know, they're not, you know, putting on the uniform every day, going into work or going out on patrol or going out on, you know, missions, in the military, whatever it is that they happen to be doing. They're not going out thinking, you know, I'm just going to be careless and, you know, mm-hmm. who cares? Let's see what happens, you know, whatever. They're going out there with self-preservation in mind as well. They don't want to, you know, cause any harm to themselves or the people around them or anything right. like that. And so you have to sort of kind of let go and just kind of trust that their training will be effective, that their life experiences up until that point will, guide them in the right direction. And, on occasion, maybe they get, injured or something like that, that could happen, but it's not mm-hmm. anything that you can control. You can't be there and, you know, be their bulletproof vest for them. You know, you can't do
that.
Oh
my gosh. Yeah.
But you do have to kind of trust.
Another mom advice was, do not buy a police scanner.
No, don't do that, please.
No, I am not interested. I did want to say one thing. When you talked a minute ago about how you look at your kid with their like military and camo of being a baby, if you will, I am not going to lie. My son's very, Kobe, the police officer, he's very adamant about like not a lot of pictures. I have zero pictures of that boy in uniform except when I pinned his badge. Yeah. I saw him once out. He met me for lunch and he was in his car, and it was interesting because he it was at a mall. He patrols kind of that area. So I met him at a mall restaurant there. And as I saw him drive, I am not gonna lie, I tell my friends this and the moms get it. They're like, oh my gosh. So I see him coming. I'm like, oh, how exciting. Like, I actually get to see him in uniform. No pictures, though. I know that.
Sure.
And as he drives by, I'm not going to lie to you. I swear, as he raised up and waved real quick driving by, he was five. It was I made it, because he wanted to be a police officer since he's tiny. Right. So it was literally like, there's my five-year-old and his dream. And he was just like.
It's like, you know, waving to mom on the first day of school as they're driving Absolutely. Away on the school bus, right?
I was like, this is insane, but it's so fun. It's so fun, I think, for me. Like I just recently told someone, you don't reap the rewards of being a mom until they become adults and you see right. who they are as a human on their own.
Sure.
And holy crap, there's just the fact that they're happy in their careers. Mm-hmm. I think that really helps too.
That's amazing.
You know, they're happy. They genuinely are like, I love my job and I am serving my purpose. And that's what I'm here for. Teaching. You want them to serve their purpose.
Exactly. We're going to cut to another quick commercial break here. So stay tuned.
This message is from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. If you're having a tough time or thinking about suicide, you're not alone. And there's hope. VA's Veterans Crisis Line is full of responders who listen and help. Many are veterans or have veteran family members and friends, so they're prepared to address your challenges. After calling, you'll be connected to the next available Crisis Line responder. That person may ask, are you thinking of suicide? or what plan can we put in place to keep you safe today? If you choose, the responder will share your name and personal information with your local VA suicide prevention coordinator, who'll connect you to local VA assistance and resources. Don't wait. Dial 988, then press 1.
So, Susie, we were talking earlier in this episode about childhood experiences and, kind of getting to kids early and helping them become a little bit more resilient. And hopefully that helps, in the long run, make it so that there's less people who are contemplating, taking their own life and that type of thing. And I know like the impact of childhood experiences, maybe it's a bad upbringing, parents might be, crappy parents or, maybe just an abusive environment that they're living in general. The experiences that kids have a big effect on mental health. How do you incorporate your own journey, things that, kind of happen with you and, your experiences, healing from different traumas into your approach for supporting other people, especially, some of the youth that you work with?
Yeah. So that's kind of where segueing into the teens happen is if we can teach these kids, it's not even so much about teaching resilience because you can't teach resilience as much as that's more of a skill you learn from learning resilience, getting right. put through stressful situations. But what you can teach are strong emotional and things like confidence, self-awareness, social awareness, all of those sorts of things will come into play. Mm-hmm. Having values, knowing your purpose, all of that stuff and where you stand and understanding negative relationships, toxic things, all of that, being able to make those choices and know when something might trigger you or when something has, how you can get some help to reduce it. Kind of like when I mentioned real quick about the dryer. If an incident happens, we want ways that we can reduce it, that we can deal with it better and not let it just fester.
Sure.
I want these kids to be able to recognize, whoa, and not that you want to throw the word trauma around loosely, but whoa, that was wildly impactful. What can I do to mitigate how that's going to affect my nervous system and my body later? Mm-hmm. Because when we ignore these things, that's when you get to the built-up pressures and the stressors that are much harder when you're older. And I think then it leads to options of, not being good enough, not this, not that. So it's really about building that as a human, understanding you're good, your purpose, your worth, you're valuable. Those are the things that are most important that get us to a good, resilient mindset.
Right. And I think there's a saying too, and I forget who said it, but there's the whole mindset is, if you judge everyone by their ability to, let's say, climb a tree, a fish is going to think that they're worthless, right? And so when you take that mindset and realize that, hey, I'm not going to be good at everything. I'm not going to be perfect at everything that I try, but I'm going to be pretty good at right. whatever my purpose is. I'm going to find what this is my purpose, and I'm dedicated, I'm passionate about whatever that thing is for me. But it's kind of about a little bit of self-discovery and figuring out what is that purpose. In your kid's case, they found their purpose in the military, in the police, doing those types of things, that's their purpose and they're happy. Right. And, they're going to be more focused when they're invested in it and they know that this is where they belong and they're going to do a great job. I have no doubt about that. When someone knows that, hey, this is my calling, this is my purpose, you're going to do great things. Right. And I think that's part of it too, is learning how to discover that stuff about yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Just having that mentality, because I was really shocked at how many kids, males and females, can't handle being away at boot camp. And let's be honest, boot camp nowadays compared to say when my friends went through it in the 90s, are different.
Are different, yes.
So if these kids can't handle boot camp right now, and it's a lot of things went into play, being lonely and away from home, not mm-hmm. understanding and knowing how to deal with that. That you don't, an 18-year-old boy does not, or girl does not need to be crying because she feels lonely because she can't see mom, to the point that it's debilitating and gets her to leave the career. That's insane to me. There are lots of things that can be done to build up for that. And that's kind of where I say it's very important to get them younger. Plus, I didn't mention to you, I have 12-year-old twin girls. When I started this in 2017, they actually, that same year, ironically, within about 5 months of me getting certified initially in my suicide training, prevention training, it's a keyword, all the time, one of them came to me and said, "Mom, what's suicide?" My best friend's brother tried. He's 15. That was fourth grade. Mm-hmm. So it's out there. It's everywhere. They're tracking kids as young as 10. So it's really an education and awareness around things. And, you know, teaching the kids that not everything is traumatic. Not everything is warranting a massive, you know, sometimes you just have to sit in the crap feeling. Yeah. And that's what it is. It's not poor you. It's, yeah, that sucks, but you got to deal with it, right?
That's the saying that we have in the military, just embrace the suck. Sometimes it's going to suck and you just got to deal with it. And, you know, sometimes you're going to be, you know, out and it's going to be pouring rain on you. It's going to be cold and it's going to be miserable and whatever. Like, okay, deal with it. Like you can bitch and moan about it all you want. It's not going to change anything. The clouds are going to be like, oh, gee, sorry. Let me just move it over here for you, you know, make your life a little bit more comfortable. Like, that's not going to happen. So like, okay, it's a crappy situation that you're in.
Yeah.
Make the best of it. Do the best that you can to make it, you know, whatever you can get out of it and make it the best that you can. Now, you mentioned earlier, you know, people who, you know, even from a young age are, you know, having suicidal thoughts and, you know, even maybe acting on some of those thoughts. What are some tips that you can give to people who might either themselves be dealing with suicidal thoughts or maybe know somebody like a loved one who might be struggling with suicidal thoughts, ideation, you know, things like that? You know, because I know a lot of times people might just be sitting there and saying, I just don't know how to help this person. I want to help, but I just don't know what to do.
Right. I think first answering the question is, if you're thinking about them yourself or you really know somebody that is, and this is something I teach kids too, I think it's important to have what you call a mental health buddy. Pay attention to your friends. Pay attention to people. Ask the question, how are they feeling? How's your mental health? If you notice they haven't left the house in a while, go over there. Make them take a walk. Mm-hmm. If it's you feeling, you know, suicidal, it's so important, and I know this from experience, to finally talk about it. Because mind you, in 2021, when it all came out on me as well, my husband of 15 years and my best friend didn't even know that I ever had these thoughts. I was giving a speech and I was like, hey, come let me practice on you. And I just blurted through the speech and they both just sat there like, what? The minute I told them, my husband's like, oh my God, so many things make sense. So many things make sense. And it was such a relief for me because now I could have the conversation. And you would be surprised how many people, it's not a weird thought to them. It's not. So just have that conversation. I hate to say normalize it because it's not normal. We shouldn't normalize it. But it should be an okay conversation because they need to be had. So I don't care if it's a stranger or if it's a best friend. Find somebody and have the conversation.
Yeah, and I think it's normalizing that it's okay to have the conversation, right? Because it shouldn't be normal, like an everyday, you know, dinner conversation that, hey, by the way, this is my, you know, that's not exactly, I think what the intent there is by that, but having, like you said, a mental health buddy, someone that you know and trust that you can turn to and say, hey, I'm having a rough time and these thoughts are creeping in my head and I need some help. You know, can you help me through this? You know, even just having someone there to listen to you could be enough to help you kind of get over whatever it is that you're dealing with. But, you know, even if that's not all that you need, that person can stay with you and give you, like you were saying earlier, give you that 11 minutes space between that thought and, you know, hopefully, you know, keeping you away from, you know, dangerous, you know, guns and knives and pills and, you know, anything else that could be lethal. and maybe even getting you to a place where it's safe. You know, depending on what's going on, maybe you need to get, you know, brought to a hospital or something, you know,
but
bring you to a place that can help you. Even if you're feeling like yourself, I just don't know what to do. Well, there are people who know what to do, and you can bring that person to those people. You know, obviously you're not going to, you know, throw a bag over their head and throw them in the trunk and kidnap them, but you know, you get them to,
move. Whatever it takes to save a life.
Yeah, I did say obviously, but as I was saying that, I was like, you know what, if it's between that and, you know, going to their funeral next week, I mean, yeah, you're going in the damn truck. Yeah. I don't care, you know?
Yeah. I think something that's super important for people to know when you are going, let's say it's not you, it's a friend or a family member, when you are going to have that conversation, if you ask the question, you need to listen. Do not interrupt them. Don't compare your life story to their story. None of that. You need to listen to them. And it's okay to say, hey, I don't understand what you're going through, but I'm willing to listen and I am here to help you figure it out. Honestly, that's all they need. What you have to understand is suicide isn't the problem. It is a perceived solution to a problem they have. They just need a little bit of hope. It sounds cliche-ish, but they just need to know that there is an end. Whether it's you having conversation, you getting them help, they just need to know that. No suicidal person genuinely wants to die. They just don't feel like there's another choice.
Yeah, and I've even heard of these reports from people who have like taken a leap off of a bridge, trying to end their life, and some of them actually do survive the fall.
Yes.
When they talk to them afterwards, so many of them realize like at that point of no return, they've already left the bridge and they're on their way down. They're thinking to themselves, "Man, I wish I didn't do that." And at that point, it's too late. You know, fortunately, some of them did survive, and were able to kind of relay that. But, once you hit that point of no return, there usually there's no coming back. And, you know, you're living with a regret, really. And that's not a place that you want to be. We're going to take another quick break here to pay the bills here. So stay tuned. In a startling description, the UN food chief warned the world with the words, "knocking on famine's door." He called what we're facing a perfect storm of a perfect storm. And he's not alone. Barron's published that a food shortage could be coming, even in the U.S. Farmers see it too. John Boyd Jr., a fourth-generation farmer, told Fox News that we're going to see empty food shelves in the coming months. That's why getting survival food is more important than ever, now. Create your own stockpile of the best-selling 4 Patriots survival food kits. It's not ordinary food. We're talking good for 25 years super survival food, hand-packed in a family-owned facility in the USA and giving jobs to over 200 Americans. They have different delicious breakfast, lunch, and dinner options. You can make these meals in less than 20 minutes. Just add boiling water, simmer, and serve. And right now, and for the next few days, listeners of the Drive On podcast will get 10% off their first order at 4patriots.com by using code DRIVEON. Go to 4patriots.com and use Drive On to start your stockpile today. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Drive On. Susie, the stigma around mental health, I think we kind of mentioned a little bit about, you know, normalizing the conversation and things like that earlier, but the stigma around mental health can be a barrier to some people going to even seeking help or even wanting to talk about it to anybody because, well, gee, I don't want to seem like I'm crazy, maybe is the thought, or, you know, I don't want people to think negatively of me or whatever. Right. How do you go about kind of breaking down this stigma, especially in communities like military or law enforcement, where maybe seeking assistance might even be perceived as a sign of weakness or even a, an issue with promotion, security clearances, that type of thing.
Right. I know they say, oh, it's not like that anymore. And I think it probably really just depends on your job. But at the same time, let's be real. If you have somebody who's really ideating suicide, are you going to put them out on the front lines right now? I mean, probably not. So I think that there has to be some reality around that. I do know that this day and age, there are so many resources that are untapped where people in fields like that, CEOs or, you know, military, police, anyone in an area where they feel like their job could be in jeopardy, there are outside resources that are not traceable. So if it's really important, take some time and you know, search that out. But I would never, never have that be a reason to keep you from getting the help you need, right? Because, I mean, obviously, being alive today is better than not having that job tomorrow. So, but like I said, I really just think there's a lot better job. It can get better, but right now it's much better in those areas with military, police, other people acknowledging and accepting that there is a lot of things around mental health.
Yeah. And I always look at it too, based on what you're just saying there. Like if, take the worst case scenario. Let's say you're a service member and you go to your chain of command and say, hey, I got this mental health issue, or you know, I've been having suicidal thoughts or whatever. And you go to your chain of command and they're like, you know what, we're booting you out. You know, you're getting kicked out. And that's like I think like probably the worst case scenario that people might think of. It's not something that happened as far as I know, anyways, at least not these days. You know, let's say that's the worst case scenario, and your unit's going on a deployment, and you know you want to be there with those guys to be there with them, but they're going to kick you out, and so you don't want to go talk to anyone because they're about to kick you out if you go and talk to them. If you were to do something and actually take your own life, well, you're not going on that deployment anyways, and right. So if you go and talk to someone, well, you may not go on that deployment, but you'll still be alive. So like there's that side of things too. Like you have to look at it that way. Like you need to live to fight another day. Maybe something bad like that happens, but you can always come back from that. You can't come back from that permanent solution, right?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's a million reasons why. And just so you know, and the audience knows, not all suicides or suicide attempts are because someone has a mental illness or because they're wildly depressed or this or that. Sometimes it's like an acute suicidal attempt where something just so devastating has happened. Maybe the, you know, breadwinner of the home has lost a very important financial role in the house, and now that's putting everything at jeopardy and stuff. There may not have been anything leading in that mental capacity up to that, but now it's just like, holy crap, there's humiliation, there's letdown, there's all these things that go through their mind, and they just at that moment feel completely worthless or useless or whatever it might be, and they feel like this is a better option, right? Yeah. So it's not always about mental health. It's really just about understanding that suicide just should never be an option. It's the only preventable death we have. And there's no, it's not prejudice. It's not specific to a race, an age. It's not. It's here and it's out there. And we need to do whatever we can for it. And like you said, there is no alternative worse than death.
Right.
It's not.
There's none. Yeah. Nothing is worse than that. Like losing your job. Okay. Yeah. That sucks. It's probably going to have a hit financially. You're like you said, humiliation, maybe you're feeling let down. All of that kind of stuff probably is going to come up. But, doing this show, I've talked to hundreds and hundreds of people. Many times there are people out there who have like, I went through some awful, awful situations.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? It brought me to something so much better than I could have even possibly imagined while I was in that situation that I thought was as good as it gets, you know? And so like better things can come from bad situations. I'm not saying like it's a magic cure, like go get yourself fired from your job and you know all of a sudden this amazing job offer is going to be thrown in your lap, right? Like that's not obviously what I'm saying, but good things can come from bad situations. So, you know, like you don't need to just throw everything away just because of one bad circumstance or even two or three or, dozens of bad circumstances. Good things can happen, but you have to also allow them to, if you're constantly out, tying your own shoelaces together and saying, hey, gee, why am I falling? Well, maybe partly you got to look at yourself and say, what are you doing? Right. And maybe need to fix something internally, but, you know, sometimes there's just like opportunities out there that you just need to have your eyes open to. And maybe you just didn't have your eyes open to them before. Right. Mm-hmm.
And understand that maybe you had to go through something for the bigger purpose.
Yeah.
It might stink to think, oh gosh, you know, I don't know how religious people, whatever your beliefs are and stuff, it might be awful to think like, well, why would God put kids into, you know, sex trafficking or something? And then you get an amazing advocate out of it that changes the laws and changes the world on it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it may not have been the same if they hadn't went through it. So just know that whatever you might be going through at the moment, there's always a bigger lesson. Whether it's a lesson you can give your kid or a lesson for the next journey, there's always a bigger lesson in what you have. It might, again, embrace the suck, like you said. Embrace it and figure out how you can put a positive spin on it. Just reframe that negative.
Yeah. And no, I know that the show is mostly focused on military community veterans and people in that space, right? But I have to imagine that the impact of childhood experiences, we were talking a little bit about this before, but the childhood experiences, that the impact of those on mental health and, you know, their sense of purpose and well-being and just their overall, self-confidence and things like that has an effect on us later on in life. Like something that happened when we were really young could, you know, still be affecting us and our personality and the way we think of ourselves in our 30s, 40s and beyond. You know, if we have more mentally tough kids or, you know, tough kids that know how to deal with the punches that get thrown to them.
Yeah.
Do you think that they're going to be better off as they get older, especially those in the military or first responder fields?
Yeah. I say moms and dads need to stop stepping in as much as they do.
Yeah.
Honestly, yeah. I mean, I watched my girls last night. They're just like fighting and my girls, you know, 12-year-old seventh graders just loot. And I'm like, let them work it out. As long as no one, you know, we have to stop stepping in and coddling and fixing it and calling the school principal and getting them out of detention. They need to experience, even if it's maybe not warranted. I used to get some punishment sometimes and I'm like, are you kidding me? I didn't even do anything. Well, okay, that's part of it. Yeah, I mean, okay, that stinks. So what's one detention? So what?
Yeah.
I mean, really? Right.
Like, just, so you lose an hour in the afternoon. Like, okay, like go deal with
it. You just tell your kid, well, then maybe you shouldn't have a friend like that.
Yeah.
Sorry, you got pulled in. Choose your friends better. You know, there's always a lesson to be had.
Yeah. And I was talking to actually my parents just last night, and my mom was talking to me, and I forget how this conversation even came up, but she was talking to us about how when she was a kid, she started kindergarten when she was like 4 years old, and they lived in a city, and she had to walk like, I don't know, like 10 city blocks to get to her school from her house or somewhere around there. It was like, you know, 8 to 10, somewhere around there. But she walked by herself. At 4 years old, city street, busy streets that she had to cross, you know, crosswalks and all that kind of stuff. These days, I look around, school lets out, and there's a line of cars wrapped around the block waiting to pick up their kids.
Yeah.
Like, these kids are not left alone ever to go figure stuff out. It's like, always the solution is just handed to them.
Yeah.
And so, like, maybe just let your kids figure it out. I don't know. Maybe is that kind of like along the lines of what you're talking about?
I would say, and I'm partially guilty. You know, my girls, again, 12, they get picked up, even though it's literally a mile. I think right now we're only doing it because it's just so hot.
Yeah. Well, you know, honestly, I say that. And, you know, we are both here in Arizona. And, you know, the weather is ungodly hot here sometimes. And so, maybe that's just a safe
thing. Walk a mile when it's 120 at 3:30. You're kind of like, mean, I can go get them. But don't get me wrong. I feel like it's our responsibility as parents to teach and educate our children. Like, I have a conversation. This was a conversation that came up the other day with the girls. I was like, okay, we teach our kids, like, avoid the, you know, somebody pulling up next to you with the white van, right? That stigma. I thought it dawned on me to teach the girls, like, hey, if an Amazon vehicle pulls up next to you and like a bunch of packages roll out and they're like, hey, can you help me? Are you going to walk over there?
Right.
It's up to us as parents to teach that. I want to call it awareness, resiliency, more awareness, right? Mm-hmm. If we can teach these things to our kids, they can be left alone. I mean, heck, look at the Danish. Their kids, I don't even think they come inside and play. They like roam for miles. And in Germany, I was shocked. My good friend, she's German. They'll leave their babies in the carriage outside the grocery store and they go in and there's just a package of all these baby carriages and no one's really supervising the children because the mom runs in. But nobody steals them. They don't have kidnapping and stuff. So I'm not saying be loosey-goosey. But the problem is, if you want to coddle and care for them and give them all the rides and stuff, awesome. But do not forget to educate them on awareness because there will be a time when they are not. And 18 comes fast. College, when you send them away, comes fast. And trust me, parents, when you get up to college, those advisors, they're not going to let you in the room to talk to them.
Right.
You think they will because you're mommy and you're paying the bill and they're going to literally look at you in the eye and say, we don't care. Your kid's an adult. Bye. And you're not allowed in.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're going to have to figure it out at that point. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like just being thrown in the deep end and, no swimming lessons, hey, this is an introduction to water over your head. No, none of that. You're just getting tossed in and that's not a great place to be learning it, right in the middle of things, things that are, relatively, safe and, walking back and forth to school, it's probably relatively pretty safe. You can come up with, someone's probably going to reach out and be like, hey, but there's this one case where somebody was walking to school and this happened. Sure. You can come up with that with any scenario, a lot of these things are relatively safe. We do have to kind of let the kids figure things out on their own. And I think that will create tougher kids who will be able to bounce back from some of these setbacks that they might experience, or at least have some street smarts. With Amazon packages falling out of a van. Like, no, I don't even care if they have puppies in the van that you're giving away. Like, no, you don't go and help that person. Like, that's their issue. You're not on the time. You're not on the clock. That's their problem. But
and what I do, it's really teaching things like conflict resolution and stuff. Let the girls duke it out. Granted, I'm not meaning like they're in there throwing blows and stuff. That's not tolerated. But if they're arguing and slamming doors and, being pissed off girls, you do you. Later, we're going to have a conversation when everyone's calmed down and we're going to walk through that conflict. Hey, how do you think you could have better responded? Or if one of them walks in a room and they're like, it's like, where's the benefit in that comment? Mm-hmm. What did you think was going to happen? Right. That's bringing in that self-awareness and teaching them conflict resolution, because those are the things we have to teach them if we want them to be better humans. And that's our job. We don't want to raise assholes. That's our job.
That's true. Well, we're going to cut to another quick commercial break here, so stay tuned. The Hero Company is a veteran-owned and operated business, and they're on a mission to make a difference. With every purchase, they help to fund service dogs for veterans with PTSD. From jewelry to apparel, keychains to dog collars, they offer a range of products. By purchasing from The Hero Company, you're intentionally being a hero for our heroes in need. Help them reach their goal of $10 million raised to help out veterans. Visit this episode's show notes or theherocompany.co/drive-on to shop and join the fight for our veterans. Well, Susie, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on today, talking with you about, all of these important issues, especially, surrounding suicide awareness and, suicide prevention. Where can people go to get in touch with you and find out more about what you do if they're looking for some of the resources that you offer?
Yeah. So best place is on Instagram or my website, suziefreeman.com, and it's spelled S-U-Z-I for Susie. And keep an eye on me right now. I have September 1st, since it is Suicide Prevention Month or Awareness Month, I'm launching for the whole month a huge campaign for fighting zero-use suicide. So we have little teen warrior boxes coming out. We're going to be going into schools, sports groups and trying to train over the next year. The goal is to train over 2,000 students here in Arizona. Great. So, you know, it's great to have these conferences bringing awareness, but I think the thing that's lacking is they're not being properly trained. So my goal is to get them trained and get it done through utilizing my title. I have Miss Elite Arizona. My platform is Zero Youth Suicide. So that's where I'm at. And I would love for you to follow along, contribute to the campaign if you can, buy a box for a teen. Comes with some resources and all of that. I would love it. So yeah, just susiefreeman.com.
Oh, great. And I'll have links to all of that in the show notes for the listeners who want to find out a little bit more and you know, help you out in your journey or even reach out for some support that you might be able to offer. So so we'll have all of those links there for everyone who wants to take a look at that. At this point in the show, I like to add some humor. I've been doing this for the last few episodes. I've been having some fun doing it. Typically, I either tell a joke, sometimes they're corny jokes, sometimes they're not the funniest jokes. Sometimes they're funnier in my head than they actually come out. Sometimes I show a video of people doing stupid things, whatever, but but whatever. If it gets someone to laugh, yeah. I'm willing to make a fool out of myself. So so I'm gonna share a little joke here. Hopefully this gets a laugh out of some people. At least gets you to crack a smile. Roll your eyes, I don't care, whatever, as long as it's, you know, brightens your day just a little bit. So it's a military related joke. One day during the Gulf War, an Iraqi general and his army were patrolling through a kind of mountainous area and terrain. You know, suddenly over one of the hills, they hear a soldier, an American soldier. And it's in the soldier says, "One American soldier can take out 10 Iraqi soldiers." And the Iraqi general smirks and he sends 10 of his soldiers over the hill. Brief firefight takes place and then everything goes quiet. And then the American soldier yells out, "One American soldier can take out 100 Iraqi soldiers." And the Iraqi general is impressed, so he laughs and sends 100 of his soldiers over the hill to finish the job. A large battle is heard over the hill that lasts much longer than the previous one, but finally everything calms down. And then they hear a voice, "One American soldier can take out 1,000 Iraqi soldiers." The Iraqi general's furious, sends 1,000 of his soldiers over. A big, long battle takes place. During the fight, a wounded Iraqi soldier comes crawling back over the hill towards the general. He goes, "Sir, don't send any more men. It's a trap. There's two of them." It's probably a long way to get to the end of a corny joke, but...
Oh my gosh. Doesn't it make you wonder sometimes, like, who comes up with these things?
I don't know. You know, sometimes, you know, I'm not the wittiest guy, so sometimes I'm going to look up some of these jokes to fill up the queue of jokes here, but, you know, it is what it is, but I kind of laughed a little when I read that one, so hopefully someone else does too. So... thank you again, Susie, for taking the time to join me and for everything that you're doing with the work that you do.
Thank you. I appreciate you for doing this.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Sun, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.